This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, September 3rd, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the old and the new. Kevin Young is a poet, professor, anthologist, and a poetry archivist. He is not yet 40, but he's already published 6 books of poems. His latest is called Dear Darkness, and it's published by Knopf. Kevin Young splits his time between Boston and Atlanta, where he curates the Donowski Poetry Archive at Emory University. He joins me from WBUR in Boston. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So we're going to hear you read some of your poems in a moment, but first I wanted to ask you about the Donowski Poetry Archive.
Sure.
It's pretty incredible, actually, what little I know about it. Tell us a little bit about Raymond Donowski, the guy who put together this archive, and give us a sense of the scope of the stuff he collected.
Well, yeah. Raymond Donowski, who's still with us, thankfully, he lives in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But he collected and assembled the archive over 25 years. His goal was to get everything in English for the 20th century worldwide, every book of poetry, every edition by every author. It's a goal he nearly achieved, which I think is the amazing thing. And it means we have 75,000 volumes of rare and modern poetry. And though it starts, I feel like, with Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass, we have a nice, beautiful first edition of that in the original binding.
Yeah.
And it goes to the present, basically, with its real strength, I think, from modernism to after World War II. And the post-war stuff is amazing.
You can find out more about the Donowski Poetry Archive on our website, poetryfoundation.org, or better yet, you can visit it next time you're in Atlanta. It's at Emory University. Is it open to the public, Kevin?
Oh, yes. All you need is to register, but you don't need anything special. You don't have to be a professor. Students can use it, anyone.
Uh-huh.
Please go visit us.
All right. So let's hear a couple of your poems. I'm wondering if you could read, first of all, Ode to the Midwest, which was first published in Poetry Magazine in 2007. And I'm from the Midwest, and I'm guessing that you are too, right?
Yeah, I moved around a lot. So I moved something like 5 times before I was 10, and then we moved to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I had moved back there to teach at Indiana University, and so
yeah.
I sort of wanted to write about that feeling of being there, but also that feeling of leaving, I suppose, in some sense.
Uh-huh. So here's Kevin Young reading Ode to the Midwest.
There's an epigraph from Bob Dylan. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I want to be doused in cheese and fried. I want to wander the aisles, my heart's supermarket stocked high as cholesterol. I want to die wearing a sweatsuit. I want to live forever in a Christmas sweater, a teddy bear nursing off the front. I want to write a check in the express lane. I want to scrape my driveway clean, myself, early, before anyone's awake. That'll put 'em to shame. I want to see what the sun sees before it tells the snow to go. I want to be the only black person I know. I want to throw out my back and not complain about it. I want to drive 2 blocks. Why walk? I want love and stuff. I want to cut my sutures myself. I want to jog down to the river and make it my bed. I want to walk its muddy banks and make me a withdrawal. I tried jumping in, found it frozen. I'll go home, I guess, to my rooms where the moon changes and shines like television.
So, Kevin, the poem begins as a satire of the Midwest, but about 2/3 through, it really takes a darker turn. I want to jog down to the river and make it my bed. I read that as kind of a hint at suicide. Am I wrong in that reading there?
Oh, I feel like it's the blues in a way. Both the humor is a kind of blues humor,
mm-hmm.
and also the solution is a kind of blues solution.
Suicide?
Which is,
really?
Well, you jump in and it's frozen, so it doesn't work.
Well, it's sort of comic.
You know, to me, the blues are the comic and the tragic, and here, this is an ode that I think has a blues tone to it, and, you know, I guess I want to be loving, and that idea of I want to cut my sutures myself is a kind of, you know, this bold, brave, wanting to be independent.
Yeah, Midwestern stoicism, sort of thing. Yeah, and then I want to throw up my back and not complain about it.
Yeah, I mean, those are all, like, all true things of friends from the Midwest. There's something about that that one admires.
Yeah. Do you ever go out in public in your sweats?
You know, I didn't even own sweats till I was much older, so I'd have to say no, but, you know, sometimes a ripped pair of shorts, why not?
Yeah, why not? Let's hear another poem. It's from your first book, Most Way Home, and it's called Eddie Priest's Barbershop and Notary. And I'm guessing that this poem is based on a real place. Am I right?
It's certainly inspired by the barbershops that I grew up in, mm-hmm. and also one specific barbershop that I spent a lot of time in around the time I wrote the poem. So in that sense, yes.
Can you read it for us?
Sure. Eddie Priest's Barbershop and Notary, closed Mondays, is music, is men off early from work, is waiting for the chance at the chair while the eagle claws holes in your pockets, keeping time by the turning of rusty fans, steel flowers with cold breezes, is having nothing better to do than guess at the years of hair matted beneath the soiled caps of drunks, the pain of running a fisted comb through stubborn knots is the dark, dirty, low-down blues, the tender heads of sons fresh from cornrows, all wonder at losing half their height, is a mother gathering hair for good luck, for a soft wig, is the round difficulty of ears, the peach-faced boys asking Eddie to cut in parts and arrows, wanting to have their names read for just a few days. And among thin jazz is the quick brush of a dun head, the black flood around your feet. Grandfathers stopping their games of ivory dominoes just before they reach the boneyard, is winking widowers announcing, cut it clean off. I'm through courting, and hair only gets in the way. Is the final spin of the chair a reflection of a reflection, that sting of wintergreen tonic on the neck of a sleeping, snow-haired man when you realize it is your turn. You are next.
The people in that poem seem to get older as the poem develops. The speaker at the very end, who may or may not be a young person, I'm guessing, it sounds like he is, seems to be taking stock of his own mortality. Is that a fair way to describe the arc of the poem?
I definitely think there's this idea of the progression, which is one of the wonderful things about a barbershop. You see all ages, and I felt like, again, thinking of Whitman, it's almost one person who is also the speaker progressing. And I suppose at the end, the speaker is older, maybe a little wiser, but also, I think, is next in this whole journey. I mean, yeah. So that's how I see the poem.
Mm-hmm. Now, barbershops and hair salons are famously an important institution in African-American life. Were you trying to come to grips with this institution?
Well, that's a great question, because the poem was written, almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
So I really hadn't seen tons of barbershops in poems. I mean, I think now it's a kind of a shorthand for a certain kind of experience. But barbershops were in big trouble after the 70s, where I grew up, where afros, people were, the afro almost destroyed the barbershop, I've heard some barbers say.
Right.
I think that it's not it's not like this obvious thing. It wasn't for me. I know there'd been that Spike Lee movie about a barbershop, which I saw after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know of tons of barbershop poems or anything like that. I think I was in a thing called the Darkroom Collective, and we were all trying, I think, to not only discover but reify these kind of institutions that we saw around us, from the barbershop to Jet Magazine, the high to the low to the everyday. And I felt like that was one of the goals of poetry in general, but especially for me at the time the poem was written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the Dark Room Collective, which was created, I think, in 1988 in Boston by a group of African-American poets. And it's A lot of the poets involved have become extremely well-known, like Thomas Sayers Ellis, Major Jackson, Natasha Trethewey, and you. How do you think your generation is different from the poets who came up in the 60s and 70s, especially in regard to race?
Well, I'm trying to write a whole book about this, so it's hard for me to articulate, which I don't think there is a huge difference, which is to say that in some sense we follow in the footsteps of Lucille Clifton and Sonia Sanchez and Amiri Baraka and Michael Harper and all those poets who went before, sometimes quite literally. But I think one other thing is that, you know, I edited an anthology called Giant Steps, The New Generation of African-American Writers, almost 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And in it, I was really trying to name this new generation in some of the ways you're asking me. And so for me, you know, I talked about these writers having a kind of hip-hop aesthetic, and that didn't mean they wrote about, you know, gangster rap, but that they could sort of take from anywhere and collage and all the, you know, they sometimes are very experimental, sometimes traditional, both of which sometimes got pushed to the side, I think, in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And so I think in that way, some of the writers do have a slightly different thing. But again, as soon as I say that, I can think of precedents and antecedents. So I think there's just a real interesting plurality right now in black writing.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Thanks.
You can read some poems by Kevin Young on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also read an article about the Donowski Poetry Archive. We always like to hear from listeners. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.